Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you for the next 4 hours. Coming up a little bit later on today, in about a half hour, actually, Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, going to join us. We'll get his perspective on how the Chiefs continue to just win games, get to 8-0, obviously, post-trade deadline reaction. And we'll find out from him if he's worried about the Chiefs and Broncos at all this weekend. I know you guys, we've had a group chat before. We've talked about trap.
They're not a joke.
We've talked about trap game stuff. Yeah. The Bills are next. Maybe you guys think it's a trap game. We'll ask
Rod
Tucker.
On paper, it should be considered that.
Maybe so. Maybe.
You have to lose it for it to be a trap game. This is the flaw I have in the system, is that people only want to call it a trap game if you lose. I think you can be in a trap game that is close and survive it.
I think you have to definitely call it before the game starts, though, then, because just be in the second half if it's a close game, be like, see? So it's definitely something you have to call. And then even then, I'm always skeptical about them to begin with, because I don't, the whole point of that is, like, I don't think there's a real definition. Like, that's the whole fun discussion around it, is like, I don't think there actually is a definition for one. So if you're like, well, what's the qualification? I don't think there really is one. It's something that everybody can kind of make up to fit whatever they want it to be. That's the joke that is kind of out there. Like, there is no,
it's ambiguous.
Yeah. There is no trap game definition. I don't know. What is it? So does it exist? I don't know. Anyway, we can maybe get into that with Ross Tucker if he's worried about the Broncos matchup for the Chiefs. You guys can always hit us up on the Jay's Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. I wanted to start with Hollywood Brown and DeAndre Hopkins a little bit, because we know D-Hop is coming off his best game as a Chief. He was incredible on Monday night with 8 catches, over 80 yards, and the 2 touchdowns. And now there's starting to be, I think, a conversation like, wait a second, why have we not discussed his long-term future in Kansas City? The same way that the minute the Chiefs got Hollywood Brown on a one-year, what, $10 million contract,
yep,
and I know he hasn't played this year, the minute that happened, we're like, man, you know, if he goes and has a decent season, would he be someone that they try to bring back? They still need wide receiver help. Does that apply to you for D-Hop? He's older.
I'll be honest. Why are we wasting our time talking about a one-year deal for Hollywood Brown if a one-year deal for DeAndre Hopkins is on the table? Do I have to give you hard numbers, or can we all just accept who has had the far better career as a wide receiver between the two? Hollywood Brown has singular a 1,000-yard season, and it was good for like 1,002 or something, barely into the 1,000-yard season mark. And so if you're asking me, who of those players I would rather have back on a one-year deal? Well, the answer is DeAndre Hopkins. It also seems like, I'll be honest, that would be easier to accomplish. Hollywood Brown is still a young player who could sign a multi-year deal, who will have a lot of suitors. The one-year deal of DeAndre Hopkins, great. I don't care about his age if it's 1 year. There's no risk in it if it's 1 year. I'm not giving him a 3-year, 4-year contract. And because, you know, Rasheed will be coming back from a major injury, Xavier Worthy will still only be in year 2. There is no guarantee of Hollywood being back, or Justin Watson being back, or McColl being back,
yeah,
or Sky Moore being back, or any of these other guys. They're going to need people in that room. So a one-year deal for DeAndre Hopkins, far more interested, by the way, significantly more interested than one for Hollywood Brown if you gave me the choice.
So I think it's way too early to make that determination. Like, I hear you. I mean, certainly if he's doing anything near what he just did on Monday night, then I think most people will say, yeah, find a way to bring him back. Let's just see how the rest of this one plays out. That includes, like, let's hope he stays healthy himself the rest of the way. But if the relationship is what it looks like it's going to be between Mahomes and Hopkins, their chemistry and how quickly they're already kind of linking up and all that, if that continues all regular season, and certainly if it results in a Super Bowl, then I think it would be a really interesting conversation to have. If you're DeAndre Hopkins, why would you be more interested in taking less money this go around than you were clearly when you took the money and you went to Tennessee?
I think it's easier because he got his final payday.
But I don't.
Like, he got his final big payday. I don't think there's some other like 3 years at $20 million a year coming for him. Do you?
No, but I also think it depends on what's that production look like. And it would still go against, even on a 1 year deal, what the Chiefs have typically done for signing a player. How often do they sign a player that'll be at that next year, what, 33 years old? Not, I mean, they're very few. I don't even know how many guys above 33 they have on the roster. Travis Kelce and who else? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's not many guys, period, that I can think of off the top of my head that are that age to begin with on their roster. So it just kind of go against.
Very few, but again, it's 1 year.
Is Tooney even 33 yet? I'm not sure.
No, but also, they already bucked that trend for him. Right? Yeah, does that make sense? Like,
yes, but it's not a full
trend for him.
Yeah, but it's a trade midseason, and they're barely paying him any money. I hear you. I think it's so dependent on just what's the production. I mean, if D-Hop ends up, Cody, with 700, 800 yards with Mahomes, and it's an unstoppable combination throughout the playoffs, then yeah, the age thing probably doesn't matter. But I just think it's premature to be like definitively they need to bring him back next year. It's been two games in a Chiefs uniform. I'm also not closing the door on Hollywood Brown. You said it might be tougher because he's younger, but if he ends up only playing in two games this year, then what does Hollywood Brown have to go out on the open market and get? Like, I think there's a chance.
There's not a big market for him.
Both are in play.
I think there'll be a market for him and more teams because of the same thing you just mentioned with Hopkins. You know, like, so that rides into the same line of thinking, but also, like, I just, given the thing, right? They're both, let's just say they're both in the same market.
Yeah.
A 1 year deal for a set amount of money. Maybe Hollywood's $5 million less because of the overall production we just discussed. I'd rather have DeAndre. I know you're gonna be like, how could you say that? You saw exactly one pass to Hollywood Brown in a preseason game that was actually a successful first down catch. And I've seen exactly two games of DeAndre Hopkins. I've seen enough. Like, I know that sounds silly, but there was always a peek to what Hollywood Brown would be in this offense. And look, some of this is probably just coming from what my personal thought of the ceiling was of Hollywood Brown in this offense anyway. And I don't think it was what I've already seen the ceiling look like in an individual game for DeAndre Hopkins. I didn't think at any point Hollywood Brown was going to have 8 for 90 for two scores. Like, that wasn't who I thought he was going to be. I thought he was a nice addition to the offense, but I didn't think he was going to be that. Plus, the idea of a one-year offense, let's say you win the Super Bowl or you don't, you're trying to get back to the game or not, a one-year offense with a coming back Rashee Rice, DeAndre Hopkins, Isaiah Pacheco, maybe one more year of Travis Kelce. That's an offense that could be top five in the league again, which it's been a few years since we've witnessed that.
No, I'd be interested, but let's see what the production's going to look like the rest of the way. I mean, it's one game. I don't think it's just going to fall off a cliff, but let's see if he's healthy. All of that, it's still early November, and all of a sudden after two games, be like, I automatically want him back. Now, if he has the production that he's pacing for now in the Chiefs uniform and things like that, then yeah, it's going to be hard to find anybody that wouldn't want him back. But he will be just as much part of that conversation as Hollywood Brown. I'll give you that. I think that'll be pretty clear as far as what his future could hold, given that Rashee Rice next year is probably getting suspended. So we're talking about having him till maybe, October, November or something, possibly.
Yeah. And then what? And then you're going to go back to Xavier Worthy as the one? Maybe if he continues to develop, right? Or is it the guy you take in the first or the second round this year? Is it like, because if they're going to have to dip into the free agency market, no offense, but this already works. Like, I know that you can just be like, well, you can wait. Yeah, of course they can wait. Obviously, they're not going to try to sign him to an extension today. That's crazy. But what I'm saying is we spent a lot of time talking about, well, the one bright side to Hollywood Brown going down is there's a chance you just be able to run this back again next year.
Yep.
Where he is the safety net to the receiver room inside of that. And what I'm telling you is, why not? If you're going to do that, DeAndre Hopkins is a way better safety net. Yeah, better safety net.
Don't disagree. Again, the one pushback would be, if I'm playing the other side, would be, well, how often do the Chiefs sign 34-year-old, 33-year-old free agents?
Maybe never.
Text
lines,
you know, someone on the text line, 913-586-7965, so they do re-sign Hall of Famers. Sure, usually homegrown Hall of Famers, though.
Yeah, Chris Jones, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce.
Homegrown guys.
They have technically given Travis Kelce even more money for like a billion homegrown times.
Yeah.
homegrown, and he's an all-time player. Look,
I think Diop will end up being a Hall of Famer, but it's on the fence. We know Travis and Chris and Patrick are all Hall of Famers already.
I think we wouldn't even question with DeAndre Hopkins if he had the Super Bowl ring. That's what's
I think that'll put him over, yes. The knock on him right now has been he had the 1 year of the PED stuff. Say what you will about it. It's there.
It always knocks.
And then the injury. He missed, I think, a full season, 21 or 20, due to an injury.
But that's 14,000 career receiving yards. But there are people who have those numbers who aren't in the Hall of Fame. So it's not, I think, Drew, I think we were like looking it up. You were talking about like AJ Green, and we're looking up like the 2024 like potential class for Hall of Famers. And there's some people in there that I'm like, man, they had a lot of yards in their career. Because someone was, once again, recently to me, trying to make the Julian Edelman argument. I'm like, do you know how many good NFL, do you know how many great NFL wide receivers are not in the Hall of Fame? Get Julian Edelman's name out of this.
I think Wes Welker would be a Hall of Famer before Julian Edelman.
Andre Johnson isn't in the Hall of Fame. Like, I'm not entertaining Julian Edelman.
If DeAndre Hopkins plays another, let's call it 3 years, and he's averaging 800 yards, we'll even say, which is below his career average, but let's say he's averaging 800, and he has a ring.
He's in.
You start looking at some of the numbers, the ring's a huge part of this equation. Fair or not, it's just we know that's the reality sometimes with if you're on the fence in the committee's eyes. I don't know if it'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. That's a different conversation, too. But DeAndre Hopkins one day, to me, will be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know when that'll be. He's also still got multiple years ahead of him in the NFL. If he stays healthy, there's no reason to believe he's hanging it up anytime soon.
Just, Andre Johnson, who has nearly identical career numbers that DeAndre Hopkins, is on his fifth trip trying to get in, and he's still not.
No ring, though, right?
And never played any for, never really played for any Johnson competitive
teams. I was going to say, I wanted to double check before I called. I didn't want to mention unless I confirmed it, but yeah, Cody, he got in August.
Okay, but it took a few trips. It was definitely not first ballot, so okay, good. Well, look, I'm not saying he's definitely not deserving of it.
Just like him, I think it could take a few tries, but he'll end up getting in there. So the fact is, the reason why we're having this conversation is because DeAndre Hopkins looked great. And
it was a lot of fun.
He looked different than any other receiver they've had since Tyreek Hill in terms of just going and catching the football. We'll ask Ross Tucker about this coming up in 20 minutes. We'll also here in 10 minutes or so get into sports betting in Missouri that did pass last night. Discuss that. A lot of you have had questions on launch date and all that, but it did pass by a very, 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 very narrow margin.
You're on your chin.
Very narrow margin. There's a chance it has a recount. We'll get into all that stuff in a second. But also last night, the college football playoff rankings for the first time came out. It's still early. I don't put a ton of stock in these this early either, but it gives you a barometer because we know ultimately the committee usually is going to narrow this down even more. And I think ultimately at the end, even if right now they're saying they picked this team over this team, once the final rankings are out for the college football playoff, suddenly they'll come up with some new like criteria for it, like, just out of nowhere. It's
played in the SEC. That's
the beautiful thing
be the
for
criteria.
Them. That's the beautiful thing for them is they literally can just change the criteria whenever they want. They claim they go by the same thing, but they don't. Anyway, college football playoff rankings did come out, and K-State came in at 19. They're not completely out of the picture, although I still maintain, I think you guys do as well, that Kansas State is going to have to win out, get to a Big 12 title game, and win the Big 12.
But at least the rankings didn't keep them out.
No, but with the expanded field, I was curious to see what matchups this could create. This is all fluid. Mm. It's going to change. But like, what does this look like? So yeah, K-State's 19. They're just in front of Colorado, who's number 20. And then Pitt and Iowa State are 18 and 17. But the 12 teams right now that are in it, Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, Miami, Texas, Penn State, Tennessee, Indiana, BYU, Notre Dame, Alabama, and then Boise State would be the group of five rep right now. Remember, there's a couple of buys in there. There's also the campus sites. But what do you make of some of the potential matchups? That's the key for me is what I was excited about expanding the playoffs. Not only a chance for the locals to get in, but we could have some really fun matchups you just normally wouldn't see. You know, I'm biased with Boise State, but fine, pick another school, throw in a different group of five school. Like Boise State against potentially a Miami team or an Ohio State. Like that's a matchup we will never, ever get otherwise. So that's kind of fun.
And like Indiana in the previous iterations of this is having a phenomenal year and have no business getting themselves into it. No, they're definitely some like the Texas, Notre Dame, Alabama. I don't care. I've seen those teams play in college football playoffs when it was only four teams, two teams, BCS, doesn't matter. They have not moved the needle for me. The ones I am more interested in are Boise State, Indiana, BYU against the big boys. What I like in the college football playoff format that you can't convince me otherwise is when you start talking about getting enough non-Big Ten, non-SEC, non-traditional powers gold in the college football playoff. The odds that one of these smaller schools gets the upset is significantly higher. That's what I like about it. I just don't want the two small schools to go against each other. I honestly think that should be the rule. It should never be someone outside of the Big Ten.
Eliminate them. Yeah.
Yeah, they should have to play each other. Let them get a chance to get further down the road and pull the upset later. Because the biggest problem I had with the whole college football playoff order this time is, wow, they're really lazy. I don't want to hear the AP poll doesn't matter anymore. They just copied it.
It doesn't matter.
It
doesn't matter. Though,
they copied their homework.
It doesn't matter because, as I said, they'll fit the narrative. They'll fit their, you know, whatever they have to do their narrative later. So, no, you're right. Like
the AP poll told us exactly what the college football playoff poll about. So it's mattered the whole time. It's been keeping track for them.
Maybe it's a baseline. Maybe it's a baseline for them out of laziness. But if you think that whatever the final AP poll is, the final week of the college football playoff reign, that they're automatically going to be the same, that's not how this works. Like, I hear you. I think you're right. A lot of these guys, there's no way they've watched every Boise State game, so they're just basing some of it off of AP voters. I think that's true for like this baseline. But I don't think in a month from now, other matchups, I think you'll start to see.
Because this is just as useless as the AP poll.
Because you and I are talking about it. That's why. This whole, come on now, you know that the ranking, the Tuesday night ranking show is all for TV and all for fodder. No, I know there was, yeah, obviously, but like the rankings are all about fodder. I mean, that's the only reason why they have the ranking show. You can argue transparency. At the end, they'll come up with what other reason they want to have an extra SEC team in over another Big Ten school or a Big 12 school or whatever.
Like, I just don't understand. This is what I don't. This is a thing I dislike about college football. Do the people who get to vote on this watch the games? Every single analytic, including record, the simplest one, supports the fact that BYU is better than Penn State. Like, there are more efficient offense, defense. They have more quality wins. They still play. Like, every single part of it suggests that one of those teams is better than the other, and one happens to be 8-0, and the other happens to be 7-1. Did you even try? Was it even an effort?
To me, I wonder, because the committee is supposed to, supposed to use the eye test, use strength of schedule. The way that it sounded like they did things was, one, they just basically copy and pasted the AP poll, but they also, they mentioned strength of schedule a lot in the reasoning for what they did in Indiana, having the 101st ranked schedule in the country compared to the 33rd for other schools. Like, I don't think there was anybody else in the top 12 that was worse than a 61st. That's part of it, but I think to your point of, They're in a power conference. They haven't lost a game. BYU in particular's resume is better than Penn State's. They should be ranked higher than Penn State anyways. Like, why are we... If the games matter as much as they should, then that loss to Ohio State, even though Ohio State is a very good football team, should matter when looking at the premise of the top eight even, instead of just, you know, looking at the top 12.
I also believe deep down, and I know they rotate those who are on the selection committee. It's 12 individuals that are on there. It's a combination of different backgrounds and previous job experiences and everything like that. But you have some people, I still firmly believe, why will they choose a Power 5 school or a SEC school in particular over another school? I still deep down think they know, some of these on the committee, that this isn't their last, the committee's not their last stop. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is they might have an opportunity in the SEC for an athletic director job or a coaching job, maybe an athletic director job, conference, whatever, and ADs. And so I think if you're an athletic director of a non-Power 5 and you're somehow on the committee, they're going to support the Group of 5. No. They're going to make sure they don't piss off.
Make sure they get the next job,
of course. The Big 12 or the Big 10 or whatever. By the way, there are some local ties on the committee this year. Gary Pinkle, former Missouri head coach, and Will Shields. Will Shields is also on the committee.
Maybe that's why Missouri got in there at 25.
I don't know how they're in the top 25, but I think, too, going back to the point of the matchups, one thing to watch, too, so it's not the Power 4 get the first four. It's the highest four-ranked conference champions to get the bye. BYU, if they were to lose, the Big 12 has been really crazy.
Yeah.
And Boise State were to keep winning. Boise State's only three spots back of BYU. Who's to say BYU falls behind Boise State and Boise State all of a sudden is the four seed and BYU, the Big 12 champ, is the I think it's very unlikely, but I think
the reason we just brought you're asking why? The reason we just brought up, I don't think the non-Group of Five people on the committee will be willing to do that. They're going to always favor the Power Five.
To me, though, I wonder, just based on how K-State losing, Colorado's got the two losses, Iowa State just lost to Texas Tech, Colorado's got Texas Tech this weekend. If BYU were to lose to... I don't know who they
play. This is what's stupid, though. It's like they should be the same. They should lose, and they should still be in, just like Penn State.
Well, no, I think they would be in. Like, whoever wins the Big 12, I think would be in.
Well, of course.
But I think Boise State, if you're comparing resumes, if BYU were to lose to Cincinnati, Boise State has the better resume than BYU with one loss because they lost to Oregon by 3 points. So, I mean, I think Boise State, I wouldn't be shocked if they actually ended up getting a bye.
I still would be because I think ultimately at the end we'll know the committee will use some other qualifier and say because they'll use the group of five thing against them because they'll say yes they lost to Oregon as their only loss but these other conferences played a much tougher schedule than what you played in the Mountain West or whatever. There'll be some excuse that comes. So it's interesting. Like us talking about it is why they do these ranking
the
shows.
The matchups definitely look fun though.
This year's different because of the expanded field and all that. I also just wonder as fun as the college site sound like the campus site games. It's going to be during winter break. What students are going to be at these games, guys? Like we're out. Like, what an amazing atmosphere it's going to be when the students are going to be there for a playoff game.
Maybe some won't go back.
I agree.
I mean, some will stay on campus because they can't. You know, they can't go back home. They're international.
Think rich people will buy to be there who are alumni because
students. Oh, I know people
campus.
Will be at the game. Of course, it'll be sold out. I'm saying like the 20-year-old amped up student section. Is that going to be the same on December 18th when winter break's going on? I don't know. We're going to all find out together.
They should do a whiteout. You know, make the atmosphere.
No. If Penn State has a playoff game and they don't do a whiteout, very disappointed.
They will. Hopefully they get a night game. I know you obviously want the night game there. The day game didn't work for them against Ohio State. That is is for sure. Here in 10 minutes, we'll talk with Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. I want to ask him about the D-Hop conversation. I'll just ask him, does he think D-Hop's going to end up in the Hall of Fame as well at some point? That's coming up in just a bit. Last night, though, we do know that for those of you in Missouri, sports betting is on the way. That passed very, very narrowly late in the morning. If you were following me on Twitter, 2:30.
Early morning, late in the morning. How's that work?
Well, it's 2:30. Is that late in the morning?
I think it's early morning.
Early.
I think once it passes midnight.
Early morning. In the early morning hours, it looked like it was going to pass. This morning, all the precincts were finally reported, basically by like less than 7,500 votes. I mean, narrow, narrow margins. Sports betting has passed. Now, there's a chance there's a recount, so who knows how that goes. But as of right this second, like anything else, yes, sports betting passed in Missouri. Are you excited? You're a Missouri resident.
I told you. I wanted the ability. This is like a freedom of choice thing. I feel like I should be allowed to make those decisions the same as I like drink alcohol or a million other autonomy choices people make. So yes, I'm very excited. I get to bet from my couch starting, I guess, early next year based on the estimates it appears people are putting out there in the early going. I mean, got everything else. Why not? Got weed and, you know, we got all kinds of stuff. Why can't I bet?
I talked to somebody yesterday. They think early 2025 is in play, and that would be as in like March Madness kind of stuff. But we'll see. It just depends on how quickly the Missouri Gaming Commission can put this together and does the recount change anything and stuff like that. But by fall for sure, they have to. The language in the bill, they have to be up and running by December of 2025. Like that is in the law.
So that's
this.
The latest.
Latest
possible.
Would be
I
December. I don't
long.
Think so either. Earliest, I think, is like a late February, March timeline. Safe bet is no pun intended, is September of next year. But we'll see. It did pass. I mean, this is something that's been trying to get through the Missouri State House and everything for and Senate since 2018 when it became a state issue and all that. But looks like next year, next football season, you should be able to go to Arrowhead and bet. Maybe during the baseball season, go to Kauffman Stadium.
That's what's
going to
be the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Is the ability to sit because, you know, not all, but the two major sports we have in this town are still reside on the Missouri side. And so the idea that now you can wager in those towns where those teams are at the time those teams are playing certainly feels different than what it's been to this point so far.
Yeah. We'll talk about maybe a little bit later on the show. Like, does this do anything for keeping the Chiefs or Royals?
I mean, they didn't promise any of the money towards them like they were maybe saying that small little nest egg they were squaring away in Kansas.
I think it has a small impact. I don't want to say zero. I don't think it's going to be the ultimate reason whether one of these teams would have gone or stay in Missouri. What they like about it, the teams, and why all the professional teams in the state of Missouri were in support of this. You probably heard the commercials, saw the commercials. Ozzie Smith was out there doing a commercial. Tony Gonzalez was doing a commercial.
They got him back in Chiefs Red.
They got Tony G back in Chiefs Red. Hey,
surprising.
Man. The reason why I think they were in support of it is they have the ability to have their own skin or license. So it's not just about maybe one day having a sports book out by the stadium. It's that they can have a license, get a share of an app or whatever it may be, and bring in revenue. The Cardinals were the front and center of this entire thing from the sports team perspective.
Well, that's because the Chiefs are worried about their stadium stuff.
I think so.
They're not trying to play both sides of that.
And Bill DeWitt there on the eastern side of the Missouri in St. Louis was very outspoken about this. They believe it'll allow them to, they want to get some renovations done at their stadium as well. They think this will help them get that done financially. But it does pass. A lot of you have asked about all the apps and stuff. I'm going to talk more specific, that kind of stuff tonight on that betting show. So if you want to know like what apps might be at launch, more details on how this happened last night and why some of you asked like, wait, why was this so close? That kind of stuff. I'll get into that tonight during that betting show from 6 to 7 here on 96.5 The Fan. But it did pass. It's been a long time coming.
Well, honestly, it's the 39th state. Talk about being behind the curve a little bit. That 39th?
Yeah, 7 of the 8 states that border Missouri
already
legalized.
And 5 of them are never going to get it, right?
Yeah, Idaho.
Like 5 of them just never going to vote for it.
Idaho is one of those. They might be the last state if they
Montana.
Ever get it. Idaho for sure might be the last state that believe it or not, Texas doesn't have it. And that's something that more and more, that's a market that they of course want to be in because of the population size. California doesn't have it. Remember they tried a ballot measure in California for sports betting and it failed miserably. There was a lot more, it was complicated. There was a lot of tribal casino stuff up there. It was a problem.
That's where Oklahoma comes into play. Another one of the states that doesn't have
Florida
it.
Florida had a problem and then they kind of had it resolved too, correct? Because now they can.
Yeah, Supreme Court got involved in that decision. Yeah, that was a controversial thing.
Does being able to bet anywhere you are in the city take Vegas away from you a little bit? You can do some of your betting anywhere.
So living in Kansas, it already kind of did. You know, we went out, obviously, nothing can compare to the experience that we had at Stadium Swim and all that. You can't replicate that in Kansas City. But in terms of like the enticement to make a bet, like the fact that, yeah, you can just do that from your couch. It's not that part of Vegas is not the same. When you go out to Vegas, you can't use FanDuel. You can't go out there. You have access to more betting in Kansas and soon to be maybe Missouri, assuming the recount is fine and doesn't have a recount or if the recount is certified and everything. That's the only thing I'll say in Missouri that's in the bill if this gets up and running officially, you will not be able to bet on Missouri college props. So like if you're a Missouri, you want to bet on Missouri Tigers, a certain player to have over 220 yards passing next year, that in the state of Missouri you will not be able to bet on them. Now you can bet on Kansas or
K-State. Talking about why in college students, but maybe you shouldn't be able to
in
do
Missouri
anyway.
In their bill you will not be able to bet on a player. You can bet on the team. You will not be able to bet on player props for the Missouri
it's
Tigers.
It's far easier to manipulate college athletes, or this is the same reason why they want to get rid of being able to bet on 10-day players in the NBA. Same reasons. Easier to manipulate people when they're not making 150. I couldn't pay Shohei enough to throw a game. Like, he makes too much money. Clearly, you could pay Jonte Porter enough money to throw a game, or throw a bet, at least. Maybe not a whole game, but a bet.
Yeah. No, that's part of it. So we'll keep you up to date again tonight. That betting show, I'll talk more about Missouri passing sports wagering, becoming the 39th state to do that. Up next, let's talk NFL with our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. I want to ask him about what he made of D-Hop's performance and what you said. Should they already be thinking about bringing him back? It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just getting started here on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold on 96.5 The Fan. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll get to something that I didn't know was happening in the next month or so. It involves a Chiefs player. No, it's not. It's not Kelsey. It's not Mahomes. But I think it's something you might be interested in. There's some audio to back it up. I'll explain some more in just a little bit. It's something that a certain Chiefs player has agreed to do. But let's talk some NFL with our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Of course, Insider Calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day. Be delicious, Ross. Good to have you on the show. Good morning. We were talking about DeAndre Hopkins a lot in the last 48 hours or so. And that catch in particular that he made on Monday night in between three defenders, that was when everybody was like, oh, the rest of the league, you let the Chiefs get this guy? Because that's not a catch that the Chiefs have had anybody make since maybe Tyreek Hill.
No, there's a lot of different aspects of it too, right? Number one, the fact that Mahomes had the trust to throw it to him in that situation. And it was a beautiful throw by Mahomes as usual. But yeah, that they have a guy that has that type of body control and those type of hands. And it wasn't just that, obviously. I mean, he made several other plays throughout the game. You could tell how happy he was to be there, how happy he was to have a quarterback like Mahomes, to be able to play on a Monday night game like that, big game, big stage, and make those plays. You're right. It's pretty remarkable the Chiefs got him. I got to ask you guys, though, is it hard to be radio hosts ever? Like,
oh.
what do you guys even talk about? You know, I go on a lot of cities, okay, around the country, a lot of different Odyssey stations, and, you know, they always have issues. You know, they're always, should we fire this guy? Should we do this? Why aren't we doing this? And I know. Every Wednesday morning, I'm on in Philadelphia for an hour.
Oh, that's got to be the best.
They absolutely get more calls or more whatever when the team is struggling or things aren't good or they didn't make a move with the trade deadline. Like, what do people even do? When you have a call, what do they call and say, hey, yeah, we're undefeated. There's nothing to complain about. Back to you guys. Like,
so
what,
I would
what
say,
is it like? What is your job like?
So last year, first off, was perfect. Lose a bunch of random games, have a wide receiver unit that snows good, still win the Super Bowl, right? Dream scenario from a sports radio perspective. Now I'll say it goes one of two ways, Ross. Either they call and complain about a player getting playing time who I didn't even know was on the roster somewhere. Like, this guy should play more. I'm like, I don't even know who that is. Or I would say we just like make fun of people who are stupid enough to doubt the Chiefs are not the best team in the league and Mahomes is not the best quarterback.
Well, that I think is interesting. Yeah, I think it's funny that like I think Mike Florio, who's a friend of mine, Pro Football Talk has the Lions number one in his power rankings, and I mean whatever. You know the good thing about the NFL. Is that none of our power rankings really matter other than the Ross Tucker Football Podcast.
Of course, of course.
Which is really what everybody's playing for every week. But no, I do think it's remarkable. I mean, it just is. And we talk about it a lot. And I go on with these other stations, like Buffalo yesterday or whatever. And the thing that's the most interesting to me is that, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, I think over the last 5 years, the Chiefs have lost one-score playoff game, being to the Bengals. And, I mean, you'd have to look it up at how many they've won.
I mean, every other one. Yeah.
Yeah, like every other one. Now, I don't know if they've all been one-score games, but sure. They've won every other playoff game. Obviously, they got blown out by the Bucs in the Super Bowl. But the point I would make is, go through the last 5 years and you look at every playoff game and, you know, the Green Bay Packers can point to five plays that if they went the other way, they would have beat the Niners in the divisional round. Same with the Lions and the Niners in the conference championship game. So the point is there's so many of these games where it's one play here, one play there, and it does seem like the teams with the greater pedigree, like the Niners and the Chiefs, win more than their fair share of those. But I guess I would just say, you know, having gone on in Buffalo every week on Tuesdays, I talk to the Baltimore guys a lot. They have MVP caliber quarterbacks.
Sure, yeah.
Right? Like they have really good teams. And yet, they probably win like 50% of those, which seems reasonable. Like, you're in the playoffs. You're playing another good team with another good quarterback. It's a close game late. They should probably win about half. You should win about half. I think that's maybe the case with the Bengals, something like that. The rate at which the Chiefs win those games and then now win them in the regular season as well, I just keep thinking it's not sustainable. Someone was asking me the other day if I thought the Chiefs would win a third straight Super Bowl, and I said no, because I said at some point there's got to be some regression to the mean there, right? Like, at some point, and I don't know that it helps them that they're winning all these regular season games like this by one score, because at some point they're not. You know, the guy's going to drop the ball like Valdes-Scantling did against the Eagles last year, or, you know, someone's not going to make the play, or the other team's going to make an incredible play. But I don't know when that's going to be.
Yeah, look, I mean, Ross, just like you said it, though. I mean, when they have to have a play, no matter how poorly they played in certain areas, when they have to have that big play, whether it's Butker with a kick, whether it's a big defensive goal line stand like they had against the Falcons early in the season, or obviously Mahomes leading a game-winning drive in overtime against Tampa, like, they always get it. And I think it's a testament, one, to obviously some of the players I just mentioned. But then that go back to Andy Reid. I mean, this team is so prepared in these moments. They're at their best. And then it also helps if sometimes you have some coaches on the other side that just make bad decisions, like not going for two.
Well, totally agree with. Now, I think the more time there is on the clock, the more you shouldn't go for two, because speaking to what we're talking about, so the Bucs go for two, right? 50-50. Let's say they get it. They're up by one. Well, then the Chiefs know they have to get a field goal, and they have four downs with which to do it. And, man, I mean, considering their third down conversion rate,
yeah, he was.
I think you'd have to feel pretty good about Mahomes converting on fourth down if you have an extra down to be able to do it. So it's interesting, because if you talk to people less than 30 seconds, they would say, some of the math people I've talked to, analytics guys, would say Bucks should have gone for two. More than 30 seconds, kick the extra point, because you don't want Mahomes and the Chiefs to have the ball in a have to get a field goal situation.
What do you
right?
mean?
Like, it actually, yeah, they actually had a chance, because if the coin toss goes the other way, you know, the Bucks could have won the coin toss and maybe Baker takes them down for a touchdown, etc. But it's funny, because I was telling literally Buffalo yesterday. So I think I told you guys this before, but, you know, I played for five teams and played with like a good quarterback, like Drew Bledsoe, and late in games, you kind of thought you were going to win because he's good. Then I went to New England, and it was, like, remarkable. You know, no matter what the situation was, even if we're down in the divisional round by a couple scores to Denver, like, everybody on the team still knew we were going to win that game. Now, by the way, we didn't. We lost that game. But it's hard to overstate the psyche. And I don't know how much of it's conscious, how much of it's subconscious, of having the quarterback like Mahomes and the demonstrated history. It's almost like those guys, when they get in those moments late, they just know they're going to win because that's what they do and that's what Mahomes does. And they've got the guy that always makes the right play. It becomes somewhat of like a self-fulfilling prophecy a little bit. I think the belief in Mahomes is probably every bit as important as Andy having them so prepared.
Ross, which of the teams in the AFC, the fringe AFC teams, do you buy as being actual trouble for any of the rest of the AFC? So Chargers, Broncos, Colts, Bengals, Jets, I don't care who it is. Of those teams, is there anyone that you're like, well, I still view them as a real threat to the, let's say, the stalwarts, Chiefs, Bills, Ravens?
Yeah, I think it's the Bengals. Now, I think the Chargers are the other one, because they're doing some really good things on defense. You know, they're running it well. And I do think Herbert's a really good quarterback, who has not always been as clutch as Mahomes has been late in games. And then it's the Bengals. Now, Bengals are going to have a major uphill climb even just to get there.
Yep.
Because I don't think they're going to beat the Ravens tomorrow night, and then they're in a really bad way. But you guys have seen it. We've all seen it. I mean, I've seen the Bengals go into Buffalo in the snow, and Joe Burrow just absolutely slice and dice the Bills, totally outplay Josh Allen in that game. And we've, you know, they've come into Kansas City and they've won an AFC Championship game. They've almost won another one. So I think it's the Bengals, but they got to get there. They got to get there first. So if I'm a Chiefs fan, I am rooting for the Bengals to lose every week because it seems like they have the one quarterback who is just so confident in himself that he does not think, and I'm not saying that Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen think that they take a backseat to Mahomes, but I just think those guys are aware of Mahomes and they're just not as poised or able to play at the same level as Mahomes in those games. Burrow is like ice cold, man. Like Burrow is a bad, bad dude. It's crazy how calm he is, how confident he is. So if you're a Chiefs fan, you know, you're rooting for the Ravens on Thursday night. You're rooting to just get the Bengals out of there. So that's a team you don't have to worry about.
Last one for you, Ross, as we're talking to Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. You mentioned the Ravens. They're playing Thursday night. We know the Ravens just beat up on the Broncos. The Chiefs are hosting the Broncos on Sunday here in Kansas City. I'm never a believer in, usually in trap games. I joke with Cody and Drew, our producer, a lot about that because I think everybody can just, nobody has a definition for what it is. So they just want to call it a trap game. They just call it a trap game.
It's a trap game, Ross.
Do you believe, one, trap games exist? You played. And two, do you think Sunday is that, knowing Buffalo's on the horizon?
Yeah, I'm not sure if trap game is the right way to describe it. I guess what I do believe, especially in college football, but to a little bit of a lesser extent in the NFL, I do believe that as much as you would think that it's easy to get to the same fevered pitch of emotion and motivation for every game, it's just not as easy as people think, right? You think, oh, it's only one game a week. They should be able to it just, for whatever reason, it doesn't seem to work that way. And so what I believe is there are times where consciously or subconsciously a team, you know, like a couple weeks ago, I did Ravens at Browns for CBS, you know, and the Browns are bad and the Ravens are really good. And yet the Browns won the game and Ravens made a bunch of critical errors. You know, they had played Monday night against the Bucs. They had played 82 snaps on defense. They looked a little bit tired. And so I think that can be a real thing. So I've been on it on both sides, right, where you're a team that's kind of on a roll and you're – I don't think players really look ahead. I mean, I think you'd be amazed how many guys in the Chiefs locker room don't even realize they play the Bills next week. I mean, really, you really would. I mean, it's truly unique. That said, I just think they played on Monday night, overtime, short week. Some of them definitely know what's coming the week after. And so maybe a little bit more of a letdown game than a trap game. I don't know, maybe it's just the tactics.
Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Appreciate it, man. Have good calls this weekend, and we'll check in next week.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear what we have nothing to complain about next
week. They'll be 9-0, and they'll win by 6.
See you guys.
See ya. Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL insider. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise Mayo. Game day, be delicious.
He's not wrong. It is a hard time in Kansas City. They are undefeated as the back-to-back defending Super Bowl champions. I'm not here to tell you that what the problems that we have here are not caviar problems, champagne problems.
Yeah, it's first-world stuff.
Yeah,
first-world problems.
Obviously, right? That's clearly been the case. But they've also been challenged more this year than in the previous two with injury, where they have had to go through a reinvention process unlike other years. Last year, we knew what the problems were. We were just kind of waiting to find out if they solved them. This year, it's like the problems came up because of injury, and it's like, can they solve them? It's just a different issue.
The only thing, we had Ross there, he mentioned, I'm not sure if these close games make them better or not. I personally 100% believe it does. I think the experience
for years
in these close games make them better in the playoffs. And so that there isn't a situation they haven't seen before and that they're going to be flustered and they can't handle the moment. That's not a worry with Andy or with Patrick Mahomes or Travis Kelce or any of these guys at all. They're a young team, right? They really are. And certainly in certain areas, offensive line, they're really young. But I don't get that sense with this team because they have the names I mentioned at those key spots and most importantly at the head coach spot too. I don't worry about how they're going to handle being down 10 on the road that doesn't happen very often. LA, it happened this year. And how did they respond? They responded pretty well after they were down 10-0 to LA. They ended up winning 17-10. They didn't give up a single point the rest of the game.
It's obviously interesting because we're viewing this different than a former professional athlete, right? Like we're looking at this thing from the other side and we're not having the same conversation. But how is it a bad thing? Like, help me understand that. How is it a bad thing to win as many close games as you do? I guess I'd fear it different if I were any other team in the league. Because every other team in the league is essentially 50-50 in close games. Drew's mentioned Cincinnati being like, hey man, they're in so many of these games. I'm like, yeah, but they just keep losing them. Or they've lost half of them. Or whatever it's going to be, or all these, and I think that's the rest of the league, not isolated to Cincinnati.
I think where Ross,
how can it be bad that Kansas City is just better at it than anyone else?
I don't know if it's necessarily bad. I think that the way he was phrasing it is kind of the way that I thought about it last year. I was almost waiting for the defense carried them so much last year. I was waiting for just the one game where there was one mistake and it never happened. Credit to Spags and the defense. Yeah. Where you're relying on them too much, whether it's Andy's lack of aggressiveness, whether it's whatever the case is, you need him to make a stop to win the game. They did it every single time. I think that's where, I don't know if...
But how many times do they have to do it in a row before you're like, but not this time?
Right. I think eventually you almost start to just believe that they're always going to come up with that stop. I think that was where Ross was going with it is, say in a playoff game, they need a they go up against a really good quarterback and he makes a play and the offense has to go win themselves a game. We've seen it all the time, but maybe the defense has to make a stop. Andy's lack of aggressiveness. Hey, he kicked. He didn't go for it here. Could have gone for it and wasted more time. Could have gone for it or whatever. Instead of kick the field goal, should have gone for it. Give him some more leg room. Does that come back to bite them?
It just never has.
It hasn't yet. So that, you almost
that's
can't,
the issue.
Yeah, you can't just say, I think it is going to happen because it hasn't happened so many times in a row.
They are different than any other team in that regard. They're not operating under the same set of rules.
Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll talk a little bit about rookie wide receiver Xavier Worthy, the stretch of games that he's on right now, and what the next couple games could look like if we think there's about to be a turnaround with him based off of the last four games in particular. So that's coming up in a little bit. But one thing I did not know was happening, what, next month or later this month, Chris Jones is going to be involved in a charity event, which is great.
Oh, that's
it's
nice.
Great.
Good
it's
to help charity.
It's going to raise some money for cancer research, which is obviously very, very important. But he's going to be on a TV show, The Full Monty, for 2 hours. Here's the promo for it.
Welcome to the real Full Monty!
For one night only, six celebrities will bear it all.
Oh my God, it's just out there!
It's going to be a very warm room.
For a great cause.
To bring awareness to cancer.
Let's rain, man!
The two-hour special event you just can't
miss. 2 hours?
The Real Full Monty, Monday, December 9th, only on Fox.
Monday
was in the audience.
Monday, December 9th, two-hour special, great cause. But if you watch the trailer, yeah, like Chris Jones, it shows him in the trailer. Like he ripping off his pants or underwear or whatever.
So wait, this is on network television.
Yeah, so obviously, Cody, they're not going to come on now. It's on Fox. It's not going to be fully nude. Yeah.
Will they be in the room and then they just black bar it? Because I'll just be honest, in Chris Jones' case. Make it big. Make that black bar big. What? Oh, yeah. Like, we haven't all seen Chris Jones' penis? It fell out in the middle of a combine.
It did. Yes, there's some
history. This will be the second time it was made public.
There's some history there. There's some background. People seem to know more about him than others. Yeah, look, I'm guessing, Cody, that it'll be either like the blurred out thing, because it's a recorded show. It's already done. So it's post-edited.
They've already finished.
So it'll be that, or I don't know, do they do the sock? A giant sock?
Giant. Also, I just got to be honest. How many people did they say it is? Eight?
I think.
Six or eight, yeah.
Do you agree to that? Like, here's the problem. Like, right?
Do you
they're
agree
like,
to
hey,
what?
They're like, Gold, we want you to help with cancer research. But you know one of the penises is Chris Jones. I mean, it doesn't even matter what you're working with. Yours is going to look like a thimble by comparison.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't even matter what you're packing.
All I know
Chris Jones's goes to his kneecap.
In the trailer, it shows what appears to be like ripping like underwear off raise money for cancer, specifically testicular cancer. So it's
like, I'll let you guys go ahead and watch dudes with their underwear.
By the look of the
Chris Jones was asked about this at media availability. Here's what he said.
What are you talking about, the fool? Look at you. it was bring awareness to cancer and making sure people are aware of the effect that cancer has on individuals and their lives. I was affected by cancer, my high school basketball coach, and for me it was a great cause, so I went full Monty.
How much did you enjoy doing it?
It was amazing, man. I mean, it's not like the world haven't seen me full Monty before. So I think it was good for what it was good for, right?
So this is a playoff of the Full Monty 1997 movie called The Full Monty, and they're doing this for charity. It's a great cause. And the fact that it's on Fox, there's not going to be actual nudity. But the trailer, I mean, they're on stage dancing or whatever, shirtless, and then it happens. But Chris Jones got asked to do this. He said yes. I'm surprised this hasn't been discussed more. I guess in December it will. His teammates are going to be giving him plenty of crap, I'm sure, for this, right?
That's a crazy thing
to agree to. There's no way Patrick Mahomes would ever agree to this, right? Chris Jones, though, why not, I guess? And maybe it's because of what you said. He's very confident.
I mean, no reason. What are the other seven people, though?
Who are the other celebrities? What do we say?
Non-athletes.
Are they?
I think Anthony Anderson is one. He's
in the trailer, yeah. Oh, and James Vanderbeek was on there?
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't even matter what you're packing.
Cody, you gave us three drops in about 5 seconds.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about this subject matter just worked.
They're adapting the movie with a celebrity twist for a great cause. Prostate, testicular, colorectal cancer testing research. It'll premiere on Monday, December 9th. The cast is Anthony Anderson, Tay Diggs, Chris Jones, Tyler Posey, James Vanderbeek, trying to encourage men to get checked.
A dancer with the stars.
Strip
judge.
The stigma.
Okay. I don't think I'll be catching that show, but I appreciate you bringing it to this show's attention.
I'm glad
Jones goes to his kneecap.
Up next, let's talk about rookie wide receiver Xavier Worthy, the stretch of games that he is on right now, and is there some hope on the horizon for his production? It's
better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network. Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.